Sweet. They say the drink doesn't help. Ah. Right then. So let's begin, shall we? This is part two. Kind of.
Yep.
Possibly part two.
Solid start.
Yeah, fucked it already. Yeah. So this is technically episode three of our Rum Demental series, and part two of our distillation area that we're talking about. It's terrible, this, isn't it? Terrible introduction. We'll go with it. It's staying in. I'm not asked. at this point, I couldn't give a flying fuck. So today we are going to be talking about continuous or column distillation, and then we're also going to explain a little bit about differences in the sort of styles between pot distillation that we spoke about last time and column distillation that we're going to speak about this time.
Nailed it.
Win. Yeah. We're getting there. We're warming up. The lips are becoming looser as we speak. So we're basically going to try and keep this very simple and very generic. There is the kind of every distillery is going to have its own sort of way of doing these things. You know, the settle might be slightly different. We're just doing sort of talking very generalized terms here, and hopefully you'll stay with us and not get lost at any point and be able to understand the whole continuous or column still process a little bit easier by the end of this, is the plan.
Sounds good. Yeah, as you were saying, like, it's the principle is generally the same, even though designs can differ a little bit. I guess we'll start on maybe the actual setup of a generic column still, and then from there we'll kind of explain the process a little bit. We covered the actual theory of distillation itself in the previous video, so if you not seen that yet, maybe go back and watch that just to understand why this is like an integral step in the rum making process, or any spirit making process really, for that matter. So I guess we'll start off with the still. We won't go into actually this kind of startup procedure for a column still right away, because that's quite complicated. We'll basically be explaining the still as if it's already up and operational. So at this stage, there's actually like the alcoholic liquid, the molasses and yeast mix, or the sugarcane juice, sugarcane syrup and yeast mix, getting heated up sometimes externally from the still and then getting put in, or sometimes distillers will choose to inject pressurized steam into the still itself. So it's a little bit different to column distillation in the sense that it's being fermented externally, then it gets placed into the still and heated up while it's in there. More often than not, there's basically like a continuous flow of the alcoholic liquid getting pumped into the still. And we'll be discussing plates in a minute. And on each of those plates, some of this alcoholic liquid is boiling and it is prevalent at each stage throughout.
Yeah, so kind of like as the name suggests, to kind of describe what these cells look like, is essentially a giant column. They tend to be kind of as tall, kind of tall, very tall, quite sort of narrow columns with, you'll see kind of a lot of the time they'll have like loads of little, like portholes almost in the side of them. And basically those kind of portholes represent sort of each plate section that's in there. And these plates kind of are the key in sort of the whole process, really, I think. And that's the reason why this way of distilling anyway is a lot more efficient than our sort of pot still. So I suppose you'll want to talk about plates for a little bit, Mr. Mitchell.
Sure. Why not? I can take over. So again, kind of like with the still designs, plate designs may vary a little bit, but in terms of general functionality and the way they work, it's basically the same principle. So typically these plates will have quite a large hole in the middle, and basically that hole allows vapor to rise up through that. more often than not, they're covered with something that is referred to as a bubble cap. And basically what that forces that vapor to do is it forces it onto the plate itself and allows it to mix with all the alcoholic liquid that is sat on that plate. Because the vapor is hot, it actually causes the liquid that's on the plate to boil. So it keeps this kind of heating process going. It allows it to mix with all the liquid that's on there. And basically the fractions or the most volatile elements in the vapor will be basically heating up at a lower boiling point. So they'll continue to rise. Those that have less volatile fractions will struggle to generate the energy to carry on, turn into vapor and rise, and still either sit at the plate or they'll actually fall back down the still. So as well as having a hole for the vapor to rise up through, there is also a little tube. It's called a downcomer. It's pretty self-explanatory. Basically, anything that is unable to carry on rising through the still, it will go down that tube. I can see you chuckling at me over there. It's putting me off.
I'm not going to make the joke. I tried it yesterday, and it was it'd be unbecoming of me. Essentially, the process behind this is kind of like what Jack explained. Basically, you know, we've got our heat source at the bottom of this kind of long column. So kind of as you sort of go up each plate, it's going to be kind of fractionally cooler. So it's going to be kind of imparting less heat onto this alcohol vapor. So it's kind of the very pure stuff really is the only things that are going to reach the top. And the kind of that's where most of, depending on kind of what distillers want to maybe do kind of style-wise, kind of most of the alcohol that will be coming off these will be taken from certainly towards the top, if not after, probably usually after the top plate. So another few things to point out. So like Jack said about our steady flow of kind of our sort of alcoholic wash that's going into this. This is our like 8 to 10% sort of molasses water mixture. That tends to come in from the middle of the still. So this all immediately starts to obviously fall down towards the bottom, towards the heat source, before it gets hot enough for these vapors to start rising again. Like Jack said, these kind of heavier, like alcohols, like fusel alcohols and stuff, that haven't got enough energy to kind of get towards these higher plates will obviously be falling back down as well. There'll be some stuff rising. So this starts this whole sort of reflux, kind of constant stuff being redistilled over and over and over again, which is kind of leads us to having a very pure, sort of clean, shall we say, alcohol coming off it. And that's kind of the key behind making this sort of process as efficient as it actually is, which is a lot more efficient than our good old friends, the pot stills.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of one of the, certainly in modern times when there's much higher demand from certain distillers and from certain distributors to get a lot of these products out on the market. There's rum as a category is certainly increasing in demand. So there's definitely a push to make processes such as these as efficient, both, you know, in terms of cost and in terms of time. When you've got these column stills that can run continuously, there's all this vapor rising from plate to plate. Essentially, you can think of every plate as having its own little distillation occurring there. So you've got continuous and simultaneous distillation happening all the time. So from there, the person that's basically running the still can have a little look at it. Depending on what sort of style of spirit they're wanting to get, they can start to pick and choose where from the still they are drawing their liquid from, like which plate they're going to take it from. So kind of like the concept of separating up the heads, hearts and tails that we discussed in the previous video with pot still. Distillers do exactly the same thing again, but this time they'll be kind of dipping in and taking bits out while all this process is just continuously ongoing. And essentially, as long as there is enough of the alcoholic liquid that we fermented going in, as long as there's the same volume of that going in as there is things getting taken out at these various different sections, the still will have enough in there to just keep on going, keep on churning out spirit.
Yeah, there are also these people kind of sometimes forget. If you go to like these distilleries, you'll find there's not actually an awful lot of people that are actually responsible for distillations. It doesn't require a lot of manpower usually. I know me and Jack went to Beef Eater. When was it? Oh God, a couple of years ago now, right?
No, sometime last year. Feels like a lifetime ago, given the current state of things. But yeah, I mean, obviously, to note, Beef Eater is gin; it's not rum. But in terms of the way they distill things, it's somewhat similar. You know,
there was like what, two guys that were on shift there where we were there.
I think they said in total it was three people responsible for all the actual gin that is distilled. And I believe, I don't want to do them a disservice, but I think they said around 60 million bottles a year.
Yeah, that was in my head, yeah. It's certainly millions of litres of gin, put it that way. Yeah.
And that's the thing, I mean, these processes are so refined at this point, and it's so, it's been so refined, and they know exactly what they're doing. It's just like clockwork for them. As long as you've got a decent basic setup with either style of these stills, as long as you've got the apparatus there to, you know, it's pretty self-explanatory in terms of doing it at a basic level. What is so fascinating between all the distillers that are out there now competing in like the rum market and spirits as a whole is how they tweak these processes a little bit to create such different and interesting results.
Yeah, certainly, like, even if we're talking about column stills, even something as simple as reducing that kind of rate of flow that our sort of molasses sort of wash or 8-10% or 5-10% kind of initial starting kind of stuff that's going into this still, even like altering the rate of that is going to have a huge impact at the other end when these things come out. Even tiny little tweaks like that are going to make a huge difference further down the line. So it's very, very complicated process. But once people have kind of got it all figured out, it becomes very simple.
Yeah. So I guess kind of one myth we want to dispel right off the bat before we kind of get into different styles of rum and what people are trying to achieve, you know, what the pros and cons of using column and what the pros and cons of using pot and stuff like that. People sometimes when they're first looking at stills believe that pot is going to create a much more flavoursome, complex final product, which in some instances that is the case, but it's not necessarily true that you can't get a really nice, well-rounded, flavoursome product from a column still also. There are loads of examples in the spirit world of distillers that use columns and create fantastic spirits, loads of examples in Armagnac production, bourbon, rum agricole that we've touched upon before, loads of those are produced, you know, in column stills. So just because it's a process that, you know, we can generate this higher ABV, and if you really want to, you can produce a neutral spirit and it'd be super clean, doesn't necessarily mean that that is all that distillers are going to be going for when they decide to opt for this method of production. So bearing that in mind then, when you're thinking about different styles of rum, difference between pot and column and what they're producing, for someone that is maybe like a little bit new to rum as a category, how would you kind of like differentiate the two? Or what would you say some good examples?
Yes. So in terms of sort of the pot still stuff, it will in general... kind of the stuff that's in the market these days tends to be a little bit more flavorful. It'll probably be more smack you in the face a little bit more in terms of flavor. And kind of the sort of the main places that are kind of you're going to get this pot stuff, certainly 100% pot still stuff from, is probably Jamaica or even somewhere like Guyana that kind of focuses a bit more on like usually like British style or like Navy style.
Yeah. So for anyone based in the UK, we kind of, we're very used to that sort of darker, slightly rougher variant of rum being what people would classify as the standard. I know that's changing a bit more in recent times. Now there's been the kind of like craze of spiced rum coming to the market, you know, and some of these sweeter products. But traditionally, what we're used to in England is the rum being a kind of like rougher, unrefined. Back in the day, it was, yeah, part of the British Navy rations. A lot of dockers would be drinking rum because it was a massive that was being imported and exported. So it's kind of seen as a bit more of a lower status kind of thing to drink, unlike something like, you know, brandy, cognac, even a lot of Scotch whiskey. It's always kind of had that higher status. Rum is certainly getting there, and there's a big trend in premiumization in the category as a whole. But it's, yeah, what we're very used to seeing on the shelves and shops is either that kind of style, or there has also been the sort of influx of what is often referred to as this sort of Spanish style of rum that's come about in recent years. So Bacardi's the prime example. Another big one's Havana Club. So these are the kind of like more lighter, somewhat crisper, cleaner styles, typically more sort of preferred for mixing, using cocktails and things like that. And again, because there's been quite a big movement in sort of like tiki drink culture and just cocktails as a whole, they're kind of on the up and up in popularity. That opens the door for a lot more of those to become available, you know, people wanting to try them out.
Yeah, I think certainly like maybe the sort of Spanish style stuff, it's usually bottled at sort of 38% or 40%. So it's not going to kind of blow your head off, like compared to some of the Jamaica stuff that you're talking, you know, 60% plus or 57% plus.
Yeah, believe it, even like the British Navy rum, it was had to be at least 54 plus, didn't it?
Yeah.
As a standard, essentially.
Yeah, so kind of the Spanish style ones tend to, like Jack said, they'll be a little bit lighter. There'll be kind of a lot of this column still rum in there, which means they're really good to kind of start out if you're kind of just starting on your little rum journey that we all go on. It's kind of a really good way, especially if you want to drink something, try and get into drinking rum by itself. Certainly there is some stuff out there, you know, that is kind of a gateway into that, kind of using these sort of column stills and, you know, the ABV being like, I mean, it's still pretty high if it's 38%, but if you're not used to it, but it is certainly a good way to go in terms of easing yourself in if you want to try and drink some rum on its own and enjoy it.
Yeah, I think as well, it's production is very important because there are certain rums out there that will have be quite high in terms of their ester count. So all these congeners that we've been talking about throughout these processes and how they're sort of manipulated by the distiller. Sometimes people, there's a bit of a disconnect. They will interpret like really potent fruity flavors, for example, as almost being a sign of like higher strength in ABV, when it's not always the case. Sometimes a rum can seem smoother or more flavorsome and actually be lower in terms of its alcoholic content than something that tastes almost quite neutral. Or vice versa. It's a really weird one. I think personally there are quite a lot of rums out there that are higher ABV, but that higher alcoholic content actually makes the rum smoother, more easy to drink, and more well-rounded. There are some like rums out there that are 38-40%, and I find them really harsh, and it's purely through the way that it's being produced.
Yeah, and then kind of another thing we probably should touch on in terms of styles is kind of these French-style agricoles. Again, they're usually made with a column still as well. And kind of certainly from our experience, some of those are packed with flavour. So it's not always necessarily the case that people sometimes seem to think that column still rum tends to be a little less going on in it, but it's certainly not always true. Most of the time they use something slightly different, called a Creole column. It's kind of the same thing, but it tends to be a little bit more squat and short.
So what's like, do you know, in terms of the functionality and the end results, those Creole stills that are a bit more squat, what does that help create? Instead, like, how does that differ from a taller column still with a lot more plates in it?
Yeah, so basically, like kind of like you alluded to, Jack, they'll have less plates in them. So it's basically, if you think about what we were talking about before, that kind of rum that you're taking off near the top of the still, it's going to have more of that sort of heavier ester flavor because it's just closer to the heat source. So it's got a little bit more energy still towards the top of the still, rather than say, you know, something that has like 21 plates in it, have 21 plates.
Yeah, makes sense. Still.
Like if you're making your agricole on an 8-plate column still, ever that's, you know, 20 foot shorter, it's going to have it's going to have a lot more sort of energy still further up towards the top of the still. So you're going to kind of retain some of those sort of flavor molecules, you know, conges and stuff like that.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, hopefully. Otherwise, we're in the wrong job.
Yeah. So, certainly in modern times when people are getting a lot more experimental as well, and it's a lot easier now to find out about ways in which certain producers and distillers are doing their thing. Back in the day, and the reason why we kind of quite loosely group styles as being like English, French, or Spanish is because in different parts of the world back in the day, they had different knowledge as to how to do these things, how to produce them. Over time, you know, travel extended a lot more and that knowledge started to spread. So naturally, there's kind of hybrids of things popping up now. There'll be people that will utilize, you know, both methodologies to a certain extent. There'll be certain distillers that will do some pot still, some column still rum. There'll be some that actually almost like merge the two together and have a pot style still with almost like a miniature column within it. There are certain rums that are amazing examples of basically a blend of the two together. So one of our favorite rums for a daiquiri currently is Veritas, which is a blend of Foursquare rum from Barbados. So that's actually done in a column, and then pot still rum from Hampden in Jamaica. So you've got that kind of Jamaican heavier, higher ester, really fruit forward rum style, and then you've also got the one from Barbados that is still got plenty of complexity going on in there, but it's just a little bit cleaner, if you will, and a little bit crisper. So therefore, when the two emerge together, you kind of get the best of both worlds. So it's a fantastic rum either to drink neat or to use in the likes of daiquiri as a base for a lot of rum-based cocktails. There's a lot going on in there. So there's so much going on in terms of people trying to utilize all these different methodologies and, yeah, basically just come up with loads of it. Just there's so many good examples. I'm like thinking of loads of different like rums and things that we've tried where they, there's a lot out there. There's a lot out there, put it that way.
So a lot of the time, like Jack said, like single distilleries will have kind of a lot of rum that's they produce will be a kind of blend of pot and column still. So these days with these kind of new guidelines and kind of rum categories that are starting to sort of take effect now, it'll be classed as single blended rum, but I'm sure that's a whole other podcast. But that's kind of like a lot of these distilleries that you'll see these days, even like Appleton from Jamaica, I mean, Mount Gay, Foursquare, you know, DDL, so from Guyana. A lot of these kind of really big distilleries that are really popular will, and make delicious rum, all of them, will use a mixture of both. So I used a kind of okay analogy yesterday where we attempted to record this, so I'll try again. So if you think of it from a distiller's point of view, if you just use pot still rum, it's kind of, you're painting a picture with 10 colours in it, say. And if you use just column still rum, you're kind of using 10 different colours to paint the same picture. But if you're using them both, you kind of get the advantage of using 20 different colours, so it's going to be a lot more broad spectrum. It's going to, you know, it's going to tick a lot more flavour boxes in terms of rum from a kind of customer point of view. It's going to have a lot, it's going to be a lot easier to balance. It's going to be a lot more interesting to kind of blend together after aging and things like that. It's it certainly allows distillers a bit more sort of creative freedom and to kind of achieve some things that they wouldn't necessarily have been able to previously.
Yeah, and as well, it's the ever kind of important efficiency side of things where, yeah, obviously pot, there are a lot of pros to it, but there are also some cons. And one of the major ones is, of course, it's very, very time consuming. You know, if you're running a variety of different stuff, you know, all under one roof, yeah, utilize some of the pros of the column, the fact that it is continuing, that it's going to be higher ABV final products, and you can just kind of like, you can start to play around with things a little bit more, and it opens a lot of different and new doors. So I mean, we've tried examples of things that are, you know, 100% pot, 100% column, mix of both. There's great examples and poor examples of all of these methodologies. I think the main thing I wanted to touch on with all the kind of previous parts of this so far is that it's every single stage is key. So your selection of your raw material, so whether you're selecting molasses or your sugarcane juice or sugarcane syrup, that is going to have a big impact on your final product. How you decide to actually ferment it, you know, whether you're using a certain strain of yeast, whether you're using wild yeast, whether you've developed your own, that will have very significant impacts on the final flavor. And same with this distillation methodology as well, depending on whether you use pot, column, a little bit of both, whether you're using, you know, batches of rum from different countries, blending them together, you know, all has to be taken into consideration. And then on top of that, we've not even started to discuss the fact that all those things are an art in themselves. Like, how do you decide, you know, how do you decide what rum from what country you're going to use and how much you're going to use in the blend? And, you know, are you going to use a certain rum, you're going to use like high ester marks and low ester marks and mix them together, and how are you going to balance that out? There's so many things you need to factor in. But
I think,
as we say,
it's going to be a future podcast. Course,
yeah, and, yeah, for sure. But it's what makes rum so great.
Before we send you off onto that path.
Definitely.
Yeah, like you said, it is what makes rum so great. I think you can get such a wide variety of flavors from these things. It's quite extraordinary, really. You know, and stuff is kind of very so unique that you could pick it out of a lineup. Like sometimes, like you could probably pick out, you know, Guyana rum out of the lineup of rums, I reckon, pretty easily, right?
You
dope. And it's stuff like that, you know, these styles have kind of come from sometimes nearly 300 years of, well, over 300 years, some of them, years of kind of hard work and consistency and,
yeah, you know, refining the process.
Exactly.
So I think that just about covers it, right? On a basic level, sort of like explains the general process. So at this point now, whether we used pot or we've used column, we now have an actual spirit. And at this point, we have to decide what sort of post-distillation methods we're going to apply to have our final product. We need to factor in whether we're going to filter the rum in some way. We need to factor in whether we're going to add some colour. If we're going to age it and how we're going to age it, where we're going to age it, what we're going to age it in, potentially if we're going to add something extra to it, whether it be sweeteners, flavorings, stuff like that. So I guess in the following episodes from this, we're probably going to delve into each of those as its own separate topic. There are some that are more controversial than others, so we'll touch upon that as well.
At this point, we've got our rum scrap. In the next podcast, a big old scrap. Not between us and some shady goings on. The seedy underbelly of the rum world, some would say. Some more outspoken members of the rum community would say. Not us. We're just quoting from other people.
Yeah, we're just observers commenting. We're just commenting on what the goings on and trying everything out. That's what we do.
Seedy.
Impartial.
Very seedy. Yes, that's us. yeah, I think that's everything. Who's? Oh,
yeah, man, you're doing the spiel.
Okay.
And I want to see some energy. Big energy.
Energy? I'm full of energy. I'm full of beans today.
Let's see it.
So, if you're watching this, hopefully, well, you should be watching it on YouTube. I don't think we're big enough to be pirated yet. So, give us a like, subscribe, comment, any questions you want to ask, and we will endeavour to answer them. We've not got anything else to do at the moment, so
and we have been given a few questions as well that we've not got to yet, but I think given the topics we're going to touch on in the next few videos, it's stuff we are going to cover anyway, so any questions that we do get that are relevant to anything that we're doing a video on, we will definitely give an answer for those, shoehorn them in.
Certainly. Like I said, give us a like on this video, comment, feel free, subscribe to our YouTube channel so you can keep up to date with all of these videos that we're putting out. Then if you want to give us a follow on Instagram, again, it's just Run With It, all one word. Again, my pronunciation is on point today. Energy as well. I think I'm ticking all the boxes here, Jack. So that's a little bit our Instagram account at the moment. Is kind of just some things that we come across, some things that have been ordered and spent far too much money on. some little snippets of these videos to keep people up to date with what we're doing. You know, all the fun stuff. Maybe an outtake.
Yeah, fingers crossed sooner rather than later we'll be actually getting back into the bars and getting out there in the world, and there'll be some interesting goings on.
So I think that's everything covered, right? We've ticked up. I think we've ticked a lot of boxes. So I guess we will see you all next time for See the Underbellies.